You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast with me, Robbie Musto, and him, Robbie Earle, reacting to the Sunday games, the remaining games in the Premier League of Match Week 12. Now, we'll get to the games at Anfield, at Stamford Bridge and the Emirates, but we have to start with the big game, the Manchester Derby, the Etihad Stadium in Manchester, where City beat United 3-1. It was a fascinating game, Robbie Earle. It was a game where we can really kind of start to gauge some opinions about where these two clubs are right now.
Yeah.
It's a competitive fixture. Wow, what a match it was. What was your initial kind of thoughts on the game?
Well, as expected, Manchester City dominated possession. But their style of play, Rob, their movement of the ball, their decision-making in certain situations almost paralyses the opposition. That's what I found. And so United maybe, and I know we'll maybe get to talk about Fellaini, that he wasn't maybe wanted to start by the manager, but he felt he had to. You know, so he got a little bit of size in there with Matic and Fellaini and Herrera, who, you know, continues to give of his best in a hard-working role in a midfield. But then you've just got pure technicians, Rob, who move the ball, who invite passes, who join in with the front men. It was just such a contrast between silk and steel. It was poetic movement. I mean, people can say we can get carried away, and the biggest thing I would say, 3-1 hugely flattered Manchester United.
Just quickly on the goals, Rob. I mean, City got off to a quick start. Dan Silva gets the first one in the first 10-15 minutes. Aguero gets a really nice goal. He powers in
from a
difficult angle. And the amazing goal, a 44-pass goal towards the end to make it 3-1. Edison again made a mistake coming out that gives United their goal. So, I mean, that's kind of the details of the goals.
Yeah.
But the general game and the difference in the match, as you alluded to, I've got, you know, silky Man City and clunky Man United. I think the difference, and trying to narrow in on the difference, I mean, there's lots of differences, Rob.
Yeah.
But I think I want to start by, and you talked about it a little bit there, the main difference for me is the centre of midfield, is the midfield players in this club. Now, you know, Martial, Rashford, Lingard or Lukaku, you know, Alexis, the guys that came on, Aguero, Sterling and Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah,
I mean, not huge difference in terms of individuals. Forget everything else. Forget the manager. Forget the team. Sterling, Aguero, Mahrez versus Rashford, Martial, Lingard.
Yeah.
But the difference comes in the middle of the park. It just absolutely does. David Silva, Bernardo Silva, Fernandinho are absolutely light years ahead of Fellaini, Matic and Herrera. Yeah. And I know Paul Pogba wasn't there, and granted, he would have made a difference.
But Kevin De Bruyne is not there, Rob, to balance that argument.
Yeah, absolutely right. Good point. And that's where it all stems from. Those midfield players. Those midfield players from Man City can get the ball in any situation, combine and involve the front players. And you can't say that for Manchester United. The United boys can't play like that. They can't get turned and combine and dominate possession. They can't put many passes together. Part of that is a manager's tactics. So that area, for me, it's absolutely key in everything the City want to do. And the United's three could do nothing to stop those guys playing.
I mean, I totally take your point. But I think it's bigger than that, Rob. I think it's about Manchester City go into games with a plan, with a tactic, with an understanding of what they're trying to do and how they're trying to achieve it.
Yeah.
Manchester United's whole plan is based around what they are trying to limit the opposition to do. It's almost Manchester United are winning games or getting results because the opposition don't take all their chances. Because
That's just Jose Mourinho, isn't it?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that when as I looked at that game, Rob, I couldn't see what Manchester United's plan was, because they were never going to get the ball. They were never going to have as many chances. I mean, they had one shot on target in 90 minutes. I mean, I really hope that Manchester United fans weren't kidding themselves at 2-1 that we're back in the game and it's closed, because it wasn't. One shot on target being the goal that you score, a penalty kick that's a mistake by the goalkeeper, tells you that they didn't create anything, Rob.
We know this, don't we? That's why I said, at the start, this is confirmation of a lot of things that we've been talking about, these two teams that come together in one game. The difference on the ball of the red team and the blue team was
exactly
was
that, that's my point. It's not the midfield is one element that makes that contrast huge, but the whole thing is different. That's the big thing I'm saying. The team, whole thing. And I wrote something down, Rob, and I kind of ended up making myself laugh. I said, it's no longer the Manchester Derby, Rob. It's not competitive anymore. From Manchester United's point of view, it's become the Manchester damage limitation. Manchester United go into that game looking to suppress City and keep the scoreline down. That's the sole purpose of Manchester United in that game. That's how far we've come in 2.5 years of Pep Guardiola taking over Manchester City.
It's amazing because... to continue that point, because it is obvious. I mean, Marcus Rashford comes right back to pick up Fernandinho. I mean, they were 1-0 down.
Did they?
Even at 1-0 down, Rob. I looked at United thinking, well, you know, they've conceded again. By the way, they conceded the first goal again, which is going to happen when you never get on the front foot.
We're going to get there, but keep going.
And they still at 1-0 down. We're like, damage limitation, like sitting back behind the ball. Like, well, this is okay, we're behind. I mean, those two wide players, Jesse Lingard and Martial, are having to race back all the time. I mean, the defensive nature of the team continues to be astonishing to me, really, and it should not be like that. This Mourinho United team is so far away what it should be. And I'm not saying that it should be top of the league and even very close to Man City, but where they are right now in the league table, they've got minus one goal difference where they are now. I think they're 12 points behind City already. It just begs more questions, Rob. It begs more debate between me and you about how, why, and what's going on at this football club. This was just a stark contrast. And you just said about it, Rob. These two guys took over this football club at the same time, and the season they just witness with their previous managers, they finished on the same points. Now, we can say that City had younger players and had better players maybe, but that's the fact of it. They were the same on the same points, and the direction and the difference with these two guys in charge of these clubs is incredible of what we're seeing right now from last season to this season. And it's just a bad look for Jose Mourinho, Rob, that isn't closer, and the others are doing a better job trying to close that gap than Manchester United, who are now sat in eighth.
Manchester United's challenge is no longer about Manchester City. Forget that. Manchester United's challenge is no longer about winning titles. Forget that. Manchester City's challenge is to grab any way they can that fourth spot. Manchester United. Sorry. Their ambition is that fourth spot. Anything beyond that, you're talking way too much. Because I know, and I thought, Robbie must just come in on, and he loves data and fact. So let's get some data and fact. They're 12 points behind Manchester City with 12 games gone. So, that's gone. By the way, they're only 12 points above Cardiff City at the other end of the table. So that's where they are. They sit behind Watford, they sit behind Bournemouth. But I know you love data and fact. Only Fulham have conceded, have had less clean sheets than Manchester United. Yeah. Only Fulham. So Huddersfield and Cardiff have had more clean sheets than Manchester United. I mean, how does that work?
In a defensive-minded coach, Robbie.
How does that work, 20 goals conceded?
Let's just make this right. It's not just about the one centre-back that he needed in the summer. There's no way that these numbers are that much better. One player can't make all this difference. It's really gone backwards.
And if this tactic, Rob, or if the way they're playing is like, okay, they go goal behind, as we've seen in a number of games now, and in recent ones they've come to win, you've got to have a functioning attacking line to do that. He's got a malfunctioning attacking line. Data in fact, Robbie Musto, in the calendar year, so in 2018, Manchester United have scored less goals than Bournemouth.
Wow.
In the calendar year...
Wow.
Manchester United have conceded more goals than Newcastle United.
Really?
I'm giving you data. In fact, Robbie Musto, I'm shoving it down your throat.
Wow.
In the calendar year 2018, only Romelu Lukaku has got double figures in the Premier League. So wow. Over the course of the year. So Alexis Sanchez in the calendar year, who's one of the highest played players in English football, has got three Premier League goals.
Didn't start
the game.
Yeah.
I mean, we're starting to get to a point where, whoa, hold on a minute. Like, this is Manchester United.
Mm. Yeah.
And we're getting to the stage where, in the years that we were playing, Rob, and Manchester United were playing Manchester City, City were a bit irrelevant. It wasn't close, and it was a bit like, oh, it's almost getting roles reversed in a short space of time.
On our last podcast, Rob, our radio show on Saturday, I think I remember asking you the question that is this game going to kind of decide if the power shift is kind of complete, that right now that Man City are the dominant force in the city, that are going in the right direction, that are going to win trophies in the future, and United are second best. And I think we've got our answer.
Yeah.
I know United fans listening are going to throw in things at the radio, whatever it is, their phone or whatever. Mm. And they can, of course, go to data and fact of history.
Let's take history out, because history goes back to maybe the days of Alex Ferguson. Let's take the last 5 years, 6 years coming up since Sir Alex Ferguson left. Manchester United's numbers, performances, style of play has been mid-table, has been 6th, 7th, 8th in terms of what they're doing. I mean, Manchester, we're in a position, Rob, and I'm looking at the league table as we're going through talking here.
Mm.
Watford and Bournemouth have the same points but sit above Manchester United on goal difference. Watford and Bournemouth. Now, the argument Man United fans can be about what City spend and all the regularity with financial play and all that. We're talking about Watford and Bournemouth sitting above Manchester United after 12 games.
I listened to Gary Neville, who's obviously a former United player, big pundit in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still defending the manager. And he's saying that Jose Mourinho is a winner. He's won everywhere he's gone. This is anybody else going in there, he says, would not be competing with Man City right now. But you've just said it in your last answer, Rob, that other teams are closer to City. Other teams are above United. This is not acceptable for Manchester United. Yeah. And he said that this isn't acceptable. But he refuses to blame the manager. And this is Mourinho's third season. He's had an incredible amount of money and time to get things right. To go to your biggest rivals, your derby rivals, and to sit back like a scared team that have no idea how to stop and didn't even want to stop the opponents. I mean, there was a little wiggle of rumour that this is turning around after that Juventus victory.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
was it turning a corner, or was it, which I think it is now, which I think is happening now, is that he's limping on. Jose Mourinho is limping on at this football club. The data and fact that you gave us there, Rob, earlier about some of those comparisons with some of those other teams, that is amazing. And now we're talking. That's a calendar year. That's a long.
Yeah, that's a lot of data.
That's a long period of time for the ownership, the board, to say, you know what? Yeah, we're not structurally, we're not right, and City are doing amazing things, but it's not okay, and it's not acceptable to spend $500 million on new talent and be sat with a -1 goal difference, and other teams, smaller clubs above you. So, confirmation for me, Rob. This game,
yes, absolutely. And what was fascinating, Rob, when both managers spoke about the game after the match, they're very different people. They had very different views on how they thought the derby went.
What about the passes for the third goal? 44 passes and in. That's close to perfection, isn't it?
Well, it's a dream, you know, to pass the ball, to move the opening. The reason for the pass the ball is to move the opening. It's not that the reason why. It's pass the ball from pass the ball is no sense. So we pass them all to move the opening, the right tempo, the assist from Bernardo, and the right tempo from Gundogan. Gundogan is incredible how he arrived, how helped us when he played. We put another midfield player there and more control, and we had more chance. So in that terms, was fantastic.
I don't think it's a bad performance at all. I told already the players that one thing is to win two matches at home, 6-0, and be fresh and be relaxed and be not just physically but also mentally. Another thing is 2 matches away, where the second one is Juventus, where you fight like animals, and it's not just the physical effort, it's also the mental effort, the pressure before the game, the pressure during the game. And I think some of the boys, they felt it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to come out with whether you think it's reasons or excuses, Rob,
yeah.
As expected. But to say that it wasn't a bad performance at all, you know, I think that's...
It's pushing it.
That's pushing it with the fans. I mean, I know that the fans have been pretty loyal to Jose Mourinho, and he has brought them silverware in his time there, but it has to be alarming, the difference and the gulf. And that's the thing that I think all the UK media outlets, all the newspapers went with the difference in the gulf of the class of those two teams was pretty stunning. And I think it's hard to argue against that. It really is, whether it's tactically... I mean, every passage of play from Pep's point of view, there's a design around it. I just had a few minutes, Rob, just looking at David Silva, and his starting position when they have the ball at the back or with Fernandinho, it's as a striker.
Higher. He's like an auxiliary striker, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. So when you look at that front line, you've got the normal kind of front three players, and you've got Anaguero, so there's your three, and then you've got David Silva and Bernardo Silva, very high. So it's like a five up there. Now, what that five does, it absolutely pins back the back four, and then when one of those peels off, nobody can go with him because they've all got a man to mark anyway.
So the midfield gets disrupted straight away because they've got to deal with the movement.
They don't want to go back. Yeah, correct. So the United midfield players don't go back and mark Silva because he's on the back line. So when he drops into midfield, there's nobody around him. I mean, the times that David Silva gets the ball and turns and sets people ahead, it's just an example, Rob, of every the attention to detail tactically to get an advantage, to outnumber, to find a player in space with no opponent. Is pretty good, pretty remarkable, and I'm not sure we've seen anybody work like this in the Premier League for as long as I can remember.
I've written the same thing, and we've got to. I think we're both wary of getting too up on City, you know, in terms of still got things to do, still got things to achieve. But I think 2.5 seasons, Pep Guardiola is redefining some of the football that we've ever seen in the Premier League, Rob. And I was the same. When you get games like at the weekend, you go back, you just look through some things. And I started to read a few articles about people's time there. And I read a great one from Thierry Henry, who talked about with Pep, he looks at the way he's going to break you down, and he wants to create dilemma in the opposition, was his phrase. And he says whether it's through those which we call up those hotspots, so the spaces between centre-back and full-back where they get those runners, that's a key spot. The wide areas where it's full-backs or wide players who either come in or stay out, whether it's midfield players making a run, whether it's Aguero with combination plays and movement. And he said a really interesting thing. He said, when Pep gets the ball, his view is that the team are going to die, the opposition are going to die. You've just got to pick your poison. And it might come through the middle, it might come down those hot spots, it might come down the wide, because whatever you do, we're going to create you another issue. We're going to create you another dilemma. We're going to create you and ask you another question, and sooner or later, you're not going to come up with the answer. And it's just... It's kind of, in a way, it's quite simple, but it's stunning in the design and the execution.
Yeah, it seems simple, Rob, but it's not, obviously it's not, because it's really hard to pull off. I think that goal at the end, the third goal for City, I think that we're going to break it down at some point on our show, because that wasn't just 44 passes kind of going around. There was a little bit of pressure involved, at least twice. And what I think is different to the way that they do it, When the pressure is on, they absolutely find a way to break a line, whether it's Stones faking and dribbling past the front line, whether it's a ball going vertically between the midfielders into the next space forward. There's always a vertical part to it. That's the thing that kills you, because you can always press when they go side to side. You can press, but when that ball goes behind you and you're looking over your shoulder that's what destroys the press. And on that goal, and in the football in general, they are brilliant at destroying the press because they're technically very good, and they always look to go vertical, so straight ahead through that line. That takes out 3 or 4 players in that line, and then they're in trouble. And that continues, by the way, through the parts of the field,
through the team
to the attacking thing, where we talked about it many times, where they try and play these balls through defenders to get players around the outside again in it, getting behind and they pull it back and score goals first time, etc., etc. So I just, you know, maybe people say we go over the top, Rob, but it is special what we're seeing. You know, we asked a question many times last year, is this the best team the Premier League's ever seen? We'll see what happens this season and what they win, but I think we're absolutely seeing it. And just on that, can they go? Can they, what they didn't do last year, can they be invincible, Robbie Earle?
Yeah. Yeah. What I've seen, Rob, they can. It's like the question, are they better? Can they get better? And I was thinking about this, and I just want to touch on one thing you talked about there. There was a time, Rob, not that long ago, when with Manchester City, you kind of thought if Vincent Kompany's out for any long spell, City will be a bit soft. They'll go missing. He's a guy who makes sure everybody's at the job. By the way, this back two, if they can continue, if they can mature, are going to be something special. People are going to be talking about these as possibly a great one of the great partnerships if they can continue to work. Because what I like certainly about Laporte is, when the ball got thrown in once or twice, Rob, I liked he was there, he was around the Fellainis and people. He wasn't going to get bullied out of it. But then when people like Rashford try to turn a pace, shows he's got good legs as well, you know. He can cover the ground. And I just thought that he's the young centre-back that maybe Stones has needed, that can work with, that his football club has needed, to not bypass Vincent Kompany, who's been a brilliant servant and still got a part to play, but to make sure that kind of frailty and negativity, or when Vinny's not there, we're now getting a stage where these two are looking like the real deal, and it's so important to what they start from the back, the way they want the ball played, the way that they both can get on the ball, and as you say, fake them, get into midfield, and all of a sudden disrupt the opposition. I think that's outstanding. The second point to your question about can they get better, could they go invincible? I was thinking about this, and you know, where do we go? The two things that stand out are there's a little bit more depth, even if it's just Riyad Mahrez bringing another option, gives him, you know, can change with Sane, can rest, can give Sterling as a false nine, all that. The other thing they've got, Rob, is experience, they've got an experience now. This team have done the full course. You know, like the United teams, they know when the times is. They know the Christmas period. They know where they've got to win. They know how to make sure they don't get beat. They've got that experience, and that's a huge important thing. With the manager, with the group, they know what it takes to win a title. And I think that's something that stands them apart from the group of last season.
Yeah, and the one thing that could derail them from that, Rob, is complacency. And we haven't seen anything like that. It's been amazing. And just to follow
that...
Wasn't that the
Raheem Sterling thing? I think that's a really interesting point. Wasn't that the pep to Raheem Sterling... We don't do that. We're not that team. We hurt people with our passing, with our movement, with our goals. We're not the and I've never seen that in a Pep team before. And I love the way, I know Rebecca says, is he slightly embarrassed Raheem Sterling? No, not at all. Raheem Sterling was brilliant again, but nip something in the bud straight away in terms of that isn't who we are. That isn't what we're about. We're not showboating. Mm. We're here to play football, beat teams and win leagues.
Yeah, it's a great point. And that's exactly what he said. He said it afterwards in his press conference he said, we don't need to do the leg over the ball and all that kind of stuff. So you're absolutely right. He's always been classy like that, Pep. And just finding on the team, Rob.
Yeah.
Just, you know, in season one, they were not easily upset, but they were upset a lot, this team, through pressing, through the energy of English football. In season two, rarely... But sometimes Liverpool certainly upset them with the way that they played it. But most teams started to respect and fear the way they played and didn't high press so much. This season, take it on again.
Yeah.
Everybody. There's nobody. I don't think there's anybody now that's gonna for any period of time. By the way, is to high press them because they've shown that they can play through that, as we said earlier on. So it's almost not become easier, but their weaknesses, which can be hustle. Get in the face, close them down,
the
high press. That
you've got to be brave to do that.
It's going.
You've got to be brave. You've got to be really brave and well set up to do that.
Yeah, and there's hardly any that can do that now in the league. So their Achilles heel, if it even was one, seems to be not an issue because of the, how they've improved, and now they, teams fear them so much that they'd rather just stay compact through the middle or deep to try and stop this team getting through. Yeah, it's remarkable.
Absolutely. It was a 3-1 scoreline, but it felt and looked a little bit more than that to me.
Just before we move on, we're just thinking, like, just back to Mourinho and what might happen. Where are we with that, Rob? I mean, my thought was that they would limp to the end of the season.
Yeah.
And at the end of the season, they'd review it all and they'd think, you know what, this isn't going in a great direction. We'll change it. Are you on that? Are you with me on that? Are you still
I wasn't quite as convinced. I still think if they lose sight of top four, if they lose sight of top four early, I think they'll try and do something. I don't think Manchester United can afford to not be in or be seen to not be in Champions League football, and that's something that's decided with half a season to go. I think that I think they'll look at that and go, you know what, somebody else with this group of players might just regenerate it and might just give us a chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be difficult to think who can do that, but you might be right. Yeah. You might be right. If they're in a similar position, eighth place, you know, as the weeks go on now, that absolututely could happen.
Should we move it on to Liverpool? A club who you felt needed something of a result, a little bit of pessimism, negativity around the football club for maybe the first time this season under Jurgen Klopp. They got the win, Rob, was important. Maybe not quite as flowing as they would like. I saw a lovely line from Jurgen Klopp before. He said, "We're not playing happy football at the moment." He wanted return to the joy in the football. I don't think it was quite the joy, but it was return to winning ways, which is important. A little bit of controversy maybe about the first goal, Rob, in the way that it come. Alexander Mitrovic got a goal disallowed for offside that you know, it was close, probably might just been on the right side, whether it was the right decision, Mitrovic was offside. But then from a rolling ball, Liverpool go down the other end and score the goal through Salah. A lot of contention about whether the offside was right, whether, you know, the free kick wasn't taken with a static ball, whether Salah would have scored and what that would have meant in the VAR situation.
Yeah, well, it'd be very different, wouldn't it?
It'd
be very different. The goal wouldn't have scored from Liverpool. No. That wouldn't have happened because the flag would have stayed down. Mm-hmm. The goal scored, they all celebrate. And then, of course, it's reviewed, and it was incredibly tight. Whatever happens on the back of that decision, Liverpool don't get to go break quickly and score a goal. So that's just what's going to happen with VAR. That's just the fact. The goal would go in, they'd all celebrate. It was a great goal, and then you continue to the kickoff, and actually it's offside. Let's restart the play here. It was an offside. So that's just how it's going to change. I mean, it wasn't, VAR's not in this game, so that the rolling is not okay. That should have been brought back as well. But we're looking at a world now that VAR's coming in. It's just coming into the Premier League. So it's better to think about what might have happened in that situation. And it would have been done very differently. Liverpool would not have scored on the back of that. That's just the way it's going to be. But, yeah, I mean, I think from Liverpool, I mean, again, Jurgen Klopp, to be fair, he's trying to change things around a little bit, Rob. Again, a different kind of system, which I actually kind of like it against maybe some of the weaker teams.
Yeah.
If you can get that front three of Salah, Mane and Firmino in the team, and you can play Jordan Shaqiri in a higher role, I think that's pretty good. Now, they weren't super silky. Mo Salah near the goal is a good thing, and that's 6 Premier League goals now in 12. So 1 in 2 is always very good, and he's not even at his same kind of levels. You take away a midfield player in this system, so it's just Wijnaldum, Fabinho, that you kind of like side by side, energy and a little bit of defensive nature. So I actually quite like the setup. It's just, the mojo or whatever it is, that fluid, the happy, the stunning. That's what it was last year, a lot of it. Stunning football hasn't been there. But defensively, they are stronger. It's another clean sheet. 2-0 victory against a struggling Fulham side that were a little more defensive setup. You know, it just was. It was a little bit. They were certainly trying to be a bit more defensive with how they went about the game. But Liverpool, you know, for whatever you think they're playing, they're still getting the points. They're getting the 3 points, and those front players are still chipping in with some goals. It's just interesting that Jurgen Klopp isn't going to continue with the 4-3-3 with Salah on the right. He is actively trying to make this better through changing the systems. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just say, I think a little nod to Jordan Shaqiri, really, Rob. I think we all thought he comes into the squad maybe questions about, you know, will his attitude be right? Will he be okay not being a starter? You know, good score, good squad, good atmosphere. Manager, we feel would manage him right. Didn't think it'd be a huge problem, but I've got to say he's having a bigger influence on this football club and might have a bigger role to play than I thought when he was signed for the £12 million, I think it was like $60 million or something, which is looking an absolute bargain.
Yeah.
I just think he might have more to offer, Rob, to this club as they go deeper into competitions and deeper as they try to hang on to City.
Yeah, I mean, this is a starting 11. He's in the starting 11, and it worked okay, and you've still got Wijnaldum and Fabinho. This is the way that he gets into the team. Mo Salah, from the right-hand side, no. More centrally, Firmino in the hole. So that leaves a spot on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
And I think it works because everybody knows that he's got some real nice quality. If you could kind of argue against him, it would be he's a bit maybe mentally weak. He's not defensively very strong. He's not particularly a hard worker. Well, those three deficits are what Jurgen Klopp is really good at improving and making you want to run. Yeah. And making you want to kind of put the work into it as well, which he is doing now. And also just Liverpool Football Club at Anfield. The fans demand that. And because of his talent, his talent's going to get him some oohs and some ahs and to be a fan favourite, if you like. And that, again, is another reason why he will be tougher. He will be fitter. He will run more to justify his place in the team. So it just makes sense for so many reasons. If Shun Jakiri goes to, you know, anywhere else, Everton or West Ham or anywhere else, he might just be that guy that flits in and out of games a little bit. But at this club, with this manager, in this stadium, with these fans and with this group of players, he is up for everything. And I think he senses that something special is happening at this club, and he's really enjoying being with it. So we're seeing his best football, creative football, and the other side that makes him, you know, an incredibly effective player for the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking the part, Jordan Shaqiri, and for Liverpool's point of view, that's 30 points from 12 games. Great start for them. Clean sheets continue to roll along, and really, they're the team who look most likely to hang on to the tails of Man City and make sure we have a title race. Let's move it on to another team down who were in the race a little bit, but maybe lost a little bit of ground this weekend. Chelsea, Rob. Chelsea drew 0-0 with Everton. Although I think this is an Everton team that continues to be improving. Kind of like what I'm seeing with Marco Silva and the shape and outfit of his team. Maybe a few missed opportunities from Chelsea's point of view. Morata again had sort of one of those days where sometimes the ball comes in the box, Rob, and he just doesn't take what I would say strong decisions, take hold of situations, has days where he kind of gets himself in the offside positions, kind of a little bit lack of concentration maybe, or a little lack of focus. Just felt it was one of those days for Chelsea where it didn't quite happen. Jorginho was probably the most, in terms of his passing and his creativity, wasn't quite on the money. His few of his decisions weren't quite as good, and maybe that affected the rhythm. It also, to me, Rob, just felt like one of those games after a kind of difficult European night, maybe travelling, getting back, a couple of days of training, sort of legs not quite as sharp and quick as they would like. And it was just one of them kind of quite laboured kind of Chelsea performances.
Do you know what I thought it was? I thought it was, I've seen this performance before. And to be fair, in other games where they have scored, it might have been a little bit later. I've seen this kind of slow, plenty of possession football, but that slow football allows the opponents to get in a good shape. And Everton and Marco Silva are a good shape now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's almost their bad result in inverted commas. So when they're not at their dynamic or their skillful or as our best or their penetrative best, then they still benefit from having the ball a ton.
Yeah.
So the 0-0, it feels like, well, yeah, they weren't at their best. The you know, Morata or Hazard, whoever it is, found it difficult to get through, and the football was a little bit slower, but they still get a 0-0. I think we're going to see a few of these. I think we're going to see a few of these 0-0s from Chelsea because of the possession that allows the opponents to get back, and that makes it a hard challenge to get through those two banks of four, whatever it is. So, you know, it's the penetration part that I think Mauricio Sarri will try and work on to make sure he creates a little bit more. It's just, I don't know.
He agreed with you, actually. I think his comments after the game were first off that their passing, their movement was too slow.
Mm.
and allowed the opposition. Now, I think there's two things on that. I think what he has got, and one of the things maybe that stands out, they've also got a decent shape and set up themselves. So yeah. If a bad day is a 0-0 against Everton, that's, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. A bad day isn't a 3-0 defeat.
That's right.
You know, and so they've got that as a baseline. And as you say, maybe improving the passing, maybe looking to make some better decisions on the ball, increase the speed of play to affect the opposition. But as you say, listen, we all know some days the legs just don't quite feel it. They're a little bit dead. You might have travelled. You might not quite be feeling, you know, great. And that's when, if Hazard doesn't come up with a bit of magic, or Willian, Pedro, they may be a little bit easier to play against. But
the other thing that our good friend Kyle Martino made a good point, and I want to get your take on it.
Yeah.
In games like this, we've just talked about need for penetration, for skill, and for somebody a little bit creative. He makes a point that Ross Barkley, who's sat on the bench, Kovacic playing in his role, is better at doing that side of the midfield position than N'Golo Kante is in terms of creating.
And
we all know that N'Golo Kante has done so much.
Yeah.
So it's a valid point about him and the team.
Point.
But
very good point.
I still think that he should be in the team. I still think that you got to have him in there. I know when we look on the paper and the setup and his positioning and he's got to get forward when he can, et cetera, support the attack. I get that he's not brilliant at that. But I also get, and I watch for a lot in this Chelsea team, is that when he's needed to defend, he is enough
when
useful.
When the opposition have the ball.
He is enough useful.
Yeah.
So I know he's not central.
Yeah.
And I know that maybe Jorginho can get caught out a little bit, but he is close to him. And N'Golo Kante is very defensive when they need him to be. And I think that midfield blend balance needs N'Golo Kante, even though Kyle's point is a valid point.
It's a very good point,
that somebody could do better on the attacking side of it. But I just, as a
I would see, and it is a really good point, and maybe it's a gamble sometimes a manager would make. I'm not sure if Sarri does, because I think Sarri values that playmaker, whether it be Jorginho or Cesc in that role. N'Golo Kante in that role is a very different player. But what you get with N'Golo Kante is ability to win the ball back, ability to close passing lanes and chase people down. And and the reason why you might get a 0-0 when you don't play well, rather than losing 1-0 because he hasn't been around there to do that. In some respect, I think Ross Barkley's challenge is with Kovacic, really, in terms of can he do enough when he's in possession? Has he done enough to get the manager's vote in these kind of situations? And that's where Ross Barkley's got to become more consistent. We've seen glimpses of it. We've seen the goals. We've seen a little bit more productivity, certainly of late. But he's got to keep that going and keep delivering the goals and the assists, so the manager starts to think, you know what, I've got to start him, and Kovacic is going to be the one who's going to be having a rest on the side.
Right now, I agree with Mauricio Sarri. I agree with him. I think Kovacic is a better player right now and can give more in this team than Ross Barkley. And William on the right, Hazard on the left. Morata's got to play, I'm afraid, instead of Olivier Giroud. He's just hot and cold, Morata.
Yeah.
But you've just got to give him a run. You've got to keep him playing. I mean, you just got to. Because I feel he's got the potential to get more goals and get on a run and be confident. And the upside is, the potential upside is better than the potential upside of Giroud, who's going to come in and get a few goals and assists and all that. But no, I think the team is right. I think, you know, they'll look to add players maybe to give them a little bit more spark in certain areas. Just can I quickly go on Everton, Rob? Because I think it is worth a little mention of Everton. And how this guy, when you look back at big decisions this football club has made, and it's made some bad ones over recent seasons.
Yeah.
Marco Silva is now proving, I think, that he was a good pick.
Yeah.
And that he's a good manager. And he's proven it. And a lot of people weren't sure, you know, close to relegated teams. And what's he really done to earn the chance?
Good
but
position,
I, but I think there's consistency. I think the money is now starting to kind of improve the team. We see Yeremina come in for Zuma, who couldn't play. Interesting next game, see who plays there alongside Michael Keane. We know Lucas Digne is doing really well at left back. I think two midfield players are good. And with Richarlison, $50 million or whatever he was, something like that.
Yeah.
Good decision. I like him. He's 21 years old. He's got a bit of everything. He's learning about English football. He's getting some goals. And with Sigurdsson in behind, Bernard's looking kind of tricky. It looks so much
better.
It's
evolving, isn't it? There's a balance now to Everton that you've not seen. I used to always look at Everton and think, like, square holes in round pegs. He doesn't quite fit there. Or they're shoving him here. And it looks better balanced to me now, Rob. Like, it's a team that knows itself, that understands its role, getting more from player. I still think there's some evolving to do. I do think Adama Lookman will be part of the first team picture soon, Rob. I think he keeps coming on and we see little cameos and him going past people. Mm. And I think sooner or later, and I think, again, good management. He's not making those decisions too early and putting pressure on the kid. Mm. But I think over the next year or so, we're going to see people like him become starters. We're going to see an evolving Everton. And I've got to be honest, if I was an Everton fan, for it'd be the first time in a while I started to think, okay, looks, I can see where we're going and where we're trying to go. And if they're supported with the right money, if he's given a little bit of patience, Everton will have days, I think, where they can go to places like Chelsea in a confident mood, that they're not just going to get played, that they're not just going to have to sit back and not have any possession. That, you know, with the right tactics and the right setup, that they can go there And certainly nick points if not get wins.
I was critical of Everton in the first few weeks of the season. Mm. When I saw front lines that was like Cenk Tosun, Calvert-Lewin, Theo Walcott, Nias played at times, Sigurdsson out in a wide position. Yeah. And I said at the time, I remember saying, like, the front line just doesn't have the quality, quality. Mm. But that switch of Richarlison to up front and Bernard coming in and Kiefer Sigurdsson playing as a number 10, all of a sudden, you know, even Theo Walcott, not one of my favourite players, but when you put him with Calvert-Lewin and Cenk Tosun and Nias or whatever, it kind of stands out as, like, you know, even Theo Walcott's not going to make this team really, really bright.
It's a bit bang average.
Right, but when you see Richarlison and Sigurdsson and Bernard tricky, then you think of Theo Walcott, you think, that's okay. Mm. Theo's not always important. Consistent, but in that front, you know, because others can do it up there now. Mm. They needed him to be consistent with his other players. That's what I'm trying to say, and he wasn't. Yeah. Now, he's not a consistent player, but with his others around him...
Yeah, you're getting consistency from some of the others now, aren't you?
They can make up, aren't you? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to make. And I just think, I agree with you. I think the consistency now with Gomez in midfield looks a nice footballer.
Yeah,
I think there's a real kind of shape to them now.
Goalkeeper, nice shot, goalkeeper.
Yeah, he's a good goalkeeper.
Good age and good feel about the football club at the moment.
They should be looking to finish seventh.
Yeah, they should be best of the rest, shouldn't they?
They should be.
Looking to be best of the rest, and that's their challenge. And then, you know, like Spurs, maybe if you think of 6-7 years ago, they've got to start thinking about how they then break into the top six. And that's where their challenge should be. And that's what you would hope Marco Silva is looking to do in his reign there at Goodison Park. Let's talk about our final game, mate. It was Arsenal, another team who again have started the season in decent form. New manager coming in, getting a bit of a bad habit though, Rob, conceding goals and often having to rely on getting something late. I think over 75% of the goals have come second half, certainly late into games, and they've got, you know, real attacking threats, but it's not a tactic you particularly want to rely on. We talked about Man United at times conceding goals. It's not something I don't think Unai Emery is going to be too pleased about, always having to sort of chase games, come back into it, and whether it's from the bench or the quality that he has on the team. Yeah. Because again, against Wolves, if things had gone different and Wolves had a couple of chances to make it 2-0 before maybe Arsenal got their goals, it could have been a very different story.
Yeah, I think to be fair to Unai Emery, he always says in his press conferences, in his interviews, that they got to improve a lot. I mean, he does, doesn't he? He says it all the time, we still need to improve a lot. And I think just like they have improved a lot, and they've been getting a lot of credit, and rightly so, and he's finding a way to be more stronger defensively. But it's not going to be fantastic all the way through now. So, yes, a really difficult game. Wolves, again, fantastic. I mean, just an excellent team. Mm. You know, they had so many chances. I mean, this game could have been 4-4, 5-5. I thought Bernd Leno had the best game I've seen him play.
Big moments, didn't he?
Big moments and big saves when the team really needed him. Granit Xhaka had a couple of some nightmares with the error he made. Sloppy play on the first goal for Wolves. It's that balancing act, isn't it? And all managers talk about it. They want to be more attacking. They want to go out there and start and score goals. But I guess I can understand with Arsenal's point of view, they just want to be more solid. They want to be more careful about that. And it's going to take a little bit of time. Wolves have surprised everybody. And we expected them to be good in the Premier League. But I didn't expect them to be this good.
This good. No. Yeah, 16 points from 12 games, the kind of football they play, the possession, their kind of attitude to games.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lovely style. It's great width. You know, there's always an outball for Wolves wide, and that wide player is on the touchline. Now, when you stretch the play like that, the opponents are stretched kind of a long way. You know, that's good when you have the ball. And they've got those midfield players that are so comfortable in keeping the ball that they can use these spare guys. And it frustrated Arsenal. I mean, it really did frustrate them. Good result for Wolves, not so much for Arsenal, but you know, this isn't the time to jump on Arsenal for not
no,
beating Wolves.
We've said it's a work in project.
Absolutely.
And I still think, you know, as we get to the 12 games in international break, I still think Arsenal are a little ahead of where I thought they'd be, to be honest, Robert. I still thought they'd, you know, win a game, draw a game, lose a game kind of thing. It's going to take this manager a while. There's already something that's been ingrained in this football club, and it's just, I think Arsenal fans would like to believe, it's just the start of what Unai Emery can achieve here. But as you say, slightly disappointing at home to draw with a newly promoted team. But when you think of Wolves, what they've done and how they've played under Nuno Espirito Santo, I don't think that's a bad result at all, mate. So, well, it was an action-packed Sunday, mate, and that's it from us. But as always, we want to hear from you, our listeners. But we want us to also rate and review the show. But this time, we want to know, who's your top four teams? Who do you think are going to finish in the top four places? I think we all think City are going to be top. But who are the other three teams who are going to take the Champions League spots? Tell us your teams, tell us your reason why, and we'll read out the best ones on our next Premier League podcast. So, on a weekend when Pep doesn't want any showboating, his team show us they're the ones still to beat. And remember, we get a week off for international games this week. So look out for our podcast on the week of Thanksgiving. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musto. Together with the two Robbies, thanks for listening. And bye for now.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.